Okay, here we go. We're going live in 3, 2, 1.
Grab your mason jars, strap on that apron. It's time for Canning with the Diva, making her mark across the globe, teaching you how to safely preserve delicious recipes. Please welcome your host, Diane Devereaux,
the Canning Diva.
Hey everyone, it's Diane Devereaux, the Canning Diva. Thank you so much for tuning in to Canning with the Diva. As usual, I am super excited to be here again another week talking about all things canning, preserving, food, you name it. We are talking about it. And I'm super excited about this episode because right now I'm staring at 4 inches of snow on the ground in the end of March. Yes, I'm not happy about this. It is supposed to be the start of spring and all of my trees were starting to bud and my lilies were starting to come up and now everything's covered in snow and I just want to cry. I even have my rhubarb poking up. I have plants with 3 leaves. They look gorgeous. They're really starting to sprout and now I just pray that the snow doesn't damage their growth and that I can still have a bumper crop. Now they are, you know, more of a cold hardy plant, of course, but I don't think any of us, even the plant itself, was anticipating 4 inches of snow. So I don't know where you reside in the world, wherever you're tuning in from, but for those of you like me in the Midwest that are getting pummeled with some snow in the end of March, my heart goes out to you. All right. So we're going to talk today about rhubarb. We're going to talk about the springtime favorite. No matter where you live, this is a delicious vegetable. It's not a fruit. We'll get into that. And I am excited to explore with you not only its history and scientific and culinary aspects, but also some practical tips, how best to consume it, its many health benefits. And then, of course, on Canning with the Diva, we're going to talk about 2 delicious water bath canning recipes so that you may preserve your rhubarb this spring. We're going to dive into strawberry rhubarb pie filling. We'll also get into rhubarb apple chutney, super yummy. And at the end of the episode, I'm going to share with you how to utilize that chutney by making a delicious and artistic tart tatin. We're going to use fresh pears. We're going to use the rhubarb apple chutney and, of course, some pie crust. And this amazing dessert will definitely wow your guests. And it's gorgeous. For those of you who have purchased my very first cookbook, which was Canning Full Circle, that was independently published by me in 2017, on page 150, I give you this rhubarb pear tart tatin recipe. But in today's episode, we're going to talk about it. I'm going to give you some techniques on how to perfect it. And if you do have my book, you've seen the images. It's absolutely gorgeous. And it's also quite delicious. So definitely listen in the whole way through. If you have to stop and come back to the episode because you're driving and we ran a little long and you didn't get to hear everything, make sure you come back to get the recipe and instructions for the tart tatin. Okay, so let's dive in. I want to begin with the origin and the history of this amazingly versatile vegetable. I find it fascinating that it has been a part of our culture for so long and a part of society, I guess is the best way to put it, right? And I just, there's so many cool facts about it that I wanted to spend just a few minutes sharing that with all of you, because like me, I think some of you are going to just leave today's podcast going, wow, I learned something new. I didn't even realize that that was an attribute or a fact about rhubarb. So pretty cool. All right. So its origin. Now, originally, it's believed to have originated in Asia, particularly in regions of China and Siberia. So that's kind of fascinating. I'm hoping because of that, it'll survive the snow. The snow that we're recently facing. I'm like, okay, you're from Siberia originally. So come on, you got to have some perseverance. It was initially cultivated, believe this or not, for its medicinal properties rather than its culinary uses. So in ancient Chinese records dating back to 2700 BC, it mentions rhubarb as a medicinal herb. So I thought that was really cool. Now, rhubarb made its way to Europe along the Silk Road during the Middle Ages. It was initially valued, like I said, for its medicinal qualities, and it was used to treat a variety of ailments, including digestive issues. Now, it made its transition from medicinal to culinary by about the 18th century. It became quite popular in British cuisine, and it particularly as a dessert, which we see that now today too. But as a dessert ingredient, is where it kind of got its start. But it wasn't until the 19th century that the rhubarb became widely cultivated for the culinary purposes. So it sounds like it really took its time to transition from a medicinal use to a culinary. And I know I don't have time today to explore all of the medicinal uses, but trust me, it piqued my interest and I will be coming back to that subject matter because I now too would love to learn about how it can be used medicinally. Today we're focused on the culinary, but So North American cultivation, so let's talk about that for just a second. Rhubarb was brought here, obviously, to North America by European settlers in the 19th century, and it became a popular ingredient in pies and crumbles and jams, which we're still seeing now in year 2024. And what they had to do, however, to make this vegetable a mainstay, they had to force it. So what that means, the technique called forcing, it was developed to produce tender, sweet rhubarb earlier in the year, which is why my rhubarb is sprouting and has grown as fast as it did just in the short period of time. So what this involves is it involves growing rhubarb in the darkness under cover, and that's what stimulated early growth. So forced rhubarb, particularly from the rhubarb triangle in West Yorkshire, England, became a highly prized product for its delicate flavor and vibrant pink color. Well, now today, rhubarb is cultivated in many regions around the world, and there's several varieties. And the majority of those that are prized are because of their color and their flavor and their tenderness. So thank you, West Yorkshire, for doing this for all of us, because we now have a plethora of varieties on hand, such as Victoria, Cherry Red, McDonald, and that is what you're seeing and tasting in a lot of your recipes. That's what you're seeing in the stores. And for those of us who grow it, we are obviously selecting varieties that give us those same attributes because we want to use them for culinary reasons. And so while rhubarb is primarily used in desserts, like I mentioned earlier, pies, crisps, crumbles, compotes, jams, preserves, things of that nature, chutney, its tart flavor pairs very well with sweet ingredients. That's why you'll often see it mixed with strawberries. However, it is also used in savory dishes, things like sauces for meats, or like we're going to talk about today, a chutney. So I will often mix it with my root crops. So if I'm doing like beets, turnips, carrots, I'll chop up some rhubarb, toss that in, and then season a little bit of oil, and I'll roast those in the oven. It's absolutely delicious because as a vegetable, you're seeing when you combine it with others that have a sweetness or a savory, like you get a variety of the flavoring. It's funny how they all start to complement each other and bring out each other's positive attributes. So think of that the next time you are grilling some root crops, or if you happen to have my cookbook, The Complete Guide to Pressure Canning, I do have a recipe in there for roasted root crops. And an addition of rhubarb is absolutely delicious. And it doesn't, upheave the acidic properties or do anything dangerous to add it to your pressure canning recipe. Because as you'll see when we get into this episode a little further, it's extremely acidic for a vegetable. So if anything, it heightens the acid. It doesn't lower it. So that's kind of cool. All right, let's take a minute and talk about its nutritional value. So regardless of how you use it, rhubarb is packed with nutrients, and it's known for its ability to aid weight loss, improve digestion. There's even some reports out there that it's preventing some Alzheimer's. I don't know the details of that, but it's doing something to help our system. It's also been reported to stimulate bone growth, and it has also been shown to increase the health of the skin. It optimizes metabolism. It's been shown and proven to improve circulation. And there is also some reports out there. I didn't dive into this very deep because I want to maybe make that another podcast or an article, but they are showing that rhubarb also protects against various cardiovascular conditions. So I thought that was pretty darn cool that, you know, we're starting to see, even from a culinary perspective, the benefits of consuming it from a health standpoint, not just a medicinal. So that's pretty awesome. Now, according to the USDA, rhubarb provides dietary fiber, protein, vitamin C, vitamin K, B complex vitamins. It's also shown to have calcium, potassium, and magnesium. And then in terms of other organic compounds, rhubarb also contains beta carotene, like your carrots, and antioxidants. So it really is nutrient packed and is definitely worth incorporating into your diet. Now, let's talk about that though. Let's talk about diet and consumption, because we need to make sure who's ever tuning in understands what part of the plant you eat and what part of the plant you do not consume. So interestingly enough, the stalks are the only thing that's eaten from this plant. The triangular leaves are extremely high in, I hope I say this right, I'm going to spell it first, O-X-A-L-I-C, oxalic. I'm probably slaughtering it, but it's an acid that is known to cause severe illnesses if it's consumed, and it unfortunately can poison you. So the leaves, poisonous, stay away from them. It's not like Swiss chard and other things that, you know, you can consume the whole plant. You cannot do so with rhubarb. You can only eat the stalk. Same with your pets. For those of us that have pets that, you know, free range throughout our yards, you know, cats especially, no, they cannot be eating or chewing on any of those leaves. So make sure you and those you love do not consume the triangular leaves. Now, if the plant is subject to extreme cold, okay, like what I'm dealing with here in Michigan, that dangerous acid can migrate into the stalk. So I want to be sure that I store it in a warm or temperate space, just like the climate where it would normally grow. So even though, I mean, I hope I actually get, because I wasn't expecting this 4 inches of snow in March. Actually, I think we're supposed to get 6 inches, but I hope it doesn't kill the plant and I don't get any rhubarb this year. But if I do, I'm not going to store it in my refrigerator. I'm going to pick it, clean it, and then I'm going to use it right away. Now, rhubarb is often commonly mistaken to be a fruit, but it is actually a vegetable. It's a close relative to garden sorrel, which is a member of the vegetable family, and it is known to grow throughout, well, a lot of Europe. It's in North America. It's indigenous to an English plant that is very common throughout Europe, but it's generally found in pastures where the soil is known to contain high iron content. Okay. You'll see it grow abundantly in meadows And I believe there's two kinds of sorrel that is cultivated for use as a vegetable or in salads. You'll see it's often called garden sorrel, S-O-R-R-E-L. But it is a slender plant. It's about 2 feet high. It has juicy stems, oblong leaves, and the leaves have like spikes of reddish green flowers. The lower level leaves are much smaller. They're anywhere from 3 to 6 inches in length, and they have a slightly like arrow-shaped base to them. Now, the upper leaves are attached directly by its base without a stalk, and they frequently become a beautiful crimson red color. So you kind of see how the family resemblance, right? It's the reverse for the rhubarb. You have the red in the stalk and the leaf is green, but they still have that gorgeous crimson color. So the science and the culinary fusion. Now, for those of you tuning in that want to home can your rhubarb, I'm delighted to share with you that rhubarb has a pH that typically ranges anywhere from 3.0 to 3.5. It can vary slightly depending on a variety of factors, primarily the soil condition in which it's grown, and of course, the actual variety, right? The acidity level, though, is often why you'll see those of us in the culinary world combining it with sweeter fruits or sweeter vegetables, because you want to offset the tartness of the rhubarb. It's very tart in flavor. And because it is high in acid, it is why we water bathe it. If we're making jam or pie filling, even chutney, we're water bathing those recipes because we are not required to add any additional acid to safely preserve it. It is quite acidic on its own. And when combined with other acidic fruits, that acid is suitable for water bathing. Now, rhubarb can also be used, as I mentioned earlier, in low acid canning recipes like the roasted root crops. And it's also really nice to use fresh when you're making a variety of other recipes. It's beautiful and delicious, whether it's used, you know, in canning or in cooking. And then honestly, one of my favorite ways, and I used to do this as a kid growing up, you know, we'd just pick it right off of the plant. We'd discard the leaf. And my grandma would give us a little Dixie cup full of granulated sugar. And we would like dip the end of the stalk in the Dixie cup and, you know, just chomp it away. I mean, it was such a good summer treat. We loved it. That little bit of sugar offset the tartness, and it was amazing. And those are some really good memories I have growing up because my grandma grew this all around her house, and we always had a plethora of fresh rhubarb. And that's, I think, probably why my favorite dessert, my favorite pie, honestly, is a strawberry rhubarb pie. It's something I grew up loving, and I'm personally not a huge sweets person. I was that kid that would scrape the icing off her birthday cake because I just don't like it, and I'm still that way as an adult. But you give me something tart with a little bit of sweet, and I'm all over it. Okay, so let's talk now about my favorite, that strawberry rhubarb pie filling. I want you to be able to create this delicious pie filling this spring, whether you grow rhubarb yourself or you purchase it. It is an amazing jar to have on your pantry shelf. Now, this recipe is going to make approximately 5-pint jars. You're welcome to double or triple it, and, you know, get as much on your pantry shelf as possible. Obviously, it comes down to how much, you know, rhubarb we can get our hands on, but just know that you are going to have a lot of delicious uses for this canning recipe. It doesn't have to go into a pie. Don't get me wrong, it makes the best pie, but you can create the crisps and the crumbles that, you know, I mentioned earlier. You can actually use the pie filling to fill the interior of a muffin. You can use it on top of vanilla ice cream. You can even use it in your breakfast. You can use it as a topper for your waffles, your pancakes. You can stuff your crepes with it, mix it with some really delicious Greek vanilla yogurt. There's a lot of really fun ways you can use pie filling that you home can. It doesn't have to just be to make a pie. So keep that in mind while you're listening to the ingredients and the instructions, and consider preserving it this spring. Okay, so I'm going to run through the ingredients like I usually do, and then we'll go back through and discuss any intricacies, but it is quite simple. You're going to start with 3 large apples. Now, I prefer you use Golden Delicious, okay? It just really tastes, personally, I think it's the best, okay? It's the best combination, but depending on what you can get your hands on, here are a few others that will work. You could use 3 Granny Smith or Johnny Gold, Lady or Rome Beauty. Okay. So 3 apples. Shoot for Golden Delicious if you can. You'll need 1 tablespoon of grated orange zest. And it's going to usually take about a medium to, well, I don't want to say small, but like a medium-sized orange to yield that 1 tablespoon. And you're just going to take the zest of it. And then you want a quarter cup of orange juice from that fresh orange. It can be freshly squeezed. Okay, so just a quarter cup. And then you'll need 7 cups of chopped rhubarb. You want them to be about 1 inch. Okay, you can go a little smaller if you'd like. Just know that you won't see a lot of the rhubarb pieces. Then it will mush up a little bit more. So if it's smaller, so I like to use about 1 inch size piece, but cut it to, you know, how you want to see it on the end of your fork. Okay, or in your pie or on your pancake, if you will. So you'll need 7 cups of rhubarb and then 2 cups of granulated sugar and 4 cups of halved hulled strawberries. Okay. You'll probably need a full quart of strawberries to yield 4 cups. It's the ratio stays the same. It's, you know, four cups to a quart should yield you 4 cups. Even if you hull them and take the, you know, the green off and cut them in half, it'll still be that 4 cups. And then as far as rhubarb goes, to get 7 cups, depending on the length of the stalk, usually your stalk lengths are about 12 to 14 inches long. 1 stalk should get you 1 cup chopped. However, if you're not growing them and you don't really get to decide, you know, at what length and you're buying them, just keep in mind, you know, it's going to be about 12 inches to yield that 1 cup. So if they're shorter, you're going to need to double that. So let me run through the ingredients again. I did it backwards, didn't I? I talked through them first. Now I'm going to run through them. So if you're taking notes, grab your pen, grab your paper. I'm going to go through that quickly so that you have it down. And then you can always reflect back to all of the information and notes about the individual ingredients. Okay, so for starters, 3 large Golden Delicious apples, 1 tablespoon of grated orange zest, 1/4 cup of freshly squeezed orange juice, 7 cups of chopped rhubarb, 2 cups of granulated sugar, and 4 cups of halved whole strawberries. All right, so now for the instructions, I want you to start with a large stainless steel stock pot, and I want you to combine, the apples and the orange zest, The apples, you're going to finely chop them. See, what we're doing with this recipe is we're not using any clear gel. We're not using any other thickening agent but the apples. The apples are going to be our thickening agent. So I want you to really finely chop them, okay? And then I want you to combine them with the orange zest and the orange juice. The goal here is you're coating the apples with that acid to avoid them from browning. Once that's done, I want you to stir in the chopped rhubarb and I want you to stir in the sugar. Bring it to a boil over medium-high heat, being sure to stir it constantly because you don't want to scorch it. Once it's at that boil, I want you to reduce the heat and allow it to boil very gently until the rhubarb is tender. And that can take about 12 to 15 minutes. And I want you to keep it moving. You don't have to stir it constantly at this point, but you definitely want to stir it frequently. We don't want to scorch anything. After the rhubarb is tender, I want you to add the strawberries. I want you to stir it, return it to a quick boil, but then remove it from the heat immediately. We do not want to overboil.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
At Canning University, we're unlocking the flavors of food preservation year-round. Dive into a world of safe and confident canning with our range of digital classes. From principles of pressure canning to the art of pickling, there's a course for every taste. Enjoy diverse learning mediums, including engaging videos, interactive PDFs, exclusive podcasts, and course certification to prove your skills. Join us on this delicious journey. Enroll now at canning.university.
I want you to use a funnel and ladle the pie filling into hot pint jars, leaving a 1-inch headspace. You heard that right. I know we're not pressure canning this. We are water bathing this, but we must allow room for the molecules to expand and the food to swell. So only fill to a 1-inch headspace. If you happen to have any trapped air pockets within the jar, remove those and add filling if necessary to maintain the 1-inch headspace. Wipe the rim and jar bands with a warm washcloth dipped in vinegar, and then I want you to add those lids and rings and hand tighten. You're going to process your jars in a hot water bath for 15 minutes. And if you know me, I'm going to always say this, remember, do not start your timer until that water is at a full rolling boil. All right, it is that simple, folks. I absolutely love this recipe. We don't get too crazy with the sugar. We do not have to add any thickening agents that are man-made or from the store. We're just using good old apples. And this recipe is just, it's absolutely delicious. So I really hope you enjoy it and love it as much as me and my family. All right, so another amazing canning recipe using rhubarb is my rhubarb apple chutney. Now, this is going to make 7 half pints or approximately 3 to 4 pints. This gorgeous chutney has a very tart yet sweet flavor. It's a really nice offset. I know it's a dichotomy there, but it also has warm tones that make it perfect to use with crepes, pastries, pie fillings, pastry fillings. Woo! All this talk of dessert, I'm having a sugar coma over here. But also keep in mind that this rhubarb apple chutney is absolutely delicious alongside pork. I've also served it alongside turkey. And I have actually opened a half pint and used it when I am serving a charcuterie board in the summer. It really has a lot of versatile uses. And of course, the tartatin, which we'll talk about at the end here. Okay, so let me go through the ingredients with you. We're going to use 5 cups of apples, and I want them peeled, diced, peeled, cored, and diced. The apples can be anything really, Spartan, Golden Delicious, Johnny Gold. Those are my 3 go-to when it comes to chutney, but there's no wrong apple, okay? And they just need to be diced. It doesn't have to be real small or finely chopped. 4 cups of rhubarb diced, 4 cups of raw sugar. And I use raw in this. You can use any white granulated. You want the zest of 1 lemon, and then you want 2 tablespoons of lemon juice from that lemon. And if your lemon doesn't produce 2 tablespoons, no worries. If you can't get it from it, no worries. Just do the bottled. It's okay. But you want 2 tablespoons. Then you need 1 cup of dried cranberries, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and 1 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. See, very simple. Both of these recipes are just very simple, but absolutely delicious. So let me go through that one more time. The ingredients for rhubarb apple chutney are 5 cups of diced apples, 4 cups of diced rhubarb, 4 cups of sugar, zest of 1 lemon, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 1 cup of dried cranberries, 1 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, and 1 teaspoon of ground nutmeg. Okay, so now the instructions. I want you to also start with a large stainless steel stock pot, and I want you to combine the apples, the sugar, and the rhubarb. Then using medium heat, not medium high, medium heat, I want you to bring it to a boil and simmer, stirring it frequently. And it's going to take about 15 minutes to really get everything to soften and meld. So I want you to keep it at a low boil, a low simmer, I should say, for that 15 minutes. Keep it moving. Don't scorch anything, but give it that time and make sure it's not on high heat. You want to use medium heat. After that 15 minutes, I want you to add the lemon zest, the lemon juice, the dried cranberries, the cinnamon, and the nutmeg. And go ahead, give it a good mix, but continue to boil gently because we, again, want to reduce this down. And it's going to take another 15 minutes. This is to be a bit thicker, okay? We don't want this to be full of liquid. We want it to be thicker. So give it time. And remember, when making this, just be gentle. Gentle with the heat, gentle with the boil. Just give it that grace, and you will have a very luscious, thick chutney by the time it's completed on the stovetop. Okay, so once it's ready, I want you to ladle the chutney into jars, leaving a 1/2 inch headspace. Obviously, remove any trapped air pockets and add additional chutney if necessary to maintain that 1/2 inch headspace. Wipe your jar rims with a washcloth dipped in vinegar, and of course, place those lids and rings on there gently, hand tighten. Now, we're going to water bath this for a little bit shorter than what you saw with the pie filling. The pie filling only takes 15 minutes, and we're going to do just a little bit less for the 1/2 pints. So 1/2 pints are going to process for 10 minutes. Pint jars are going to process for 15. If you happen to make of both sizes and you put both the 1/2 pints and the pints in the water bather, that's totally fine. Just know that everything will have to process for 15 minutes. It's not going to harm the chutney in the 1/2 pints. Okay. So keep that in mind. There are often times where, depending on how big or small you chop things, you might wind up with a little bit extra. So you don't have a whole pint worth. So you put a 1/2 pint, you know, in the canner. That's totally fine. When you're mixing the sizes and they have different processing times, you just have to process everything for the longer time. All right. And then as always, like I always say, please do not start your timer until the water is at a full rolling boil. All righty. So we just went through 2 amazing recipes. And the reason I wanted to end today's episode with the tart tatin is because I am often asked, okay, so this chutney sounds amazing, but how do I use it? And I get it. The ingredients sound awesome. And then you start really thinking about it and you're like, well, I don't know what to do with it. And I don't necessarily want it on toast. So when I was working on my first cookbook, which I independently published, Canning Full Circle, I published that back in 2017. Proud to say that I won an IPPI award for that book in 2018. That was a blessing and a surprise. I had so much fun traveling to New York City to receive my award with my friend and food photographer, Jeff Haig. That was, that was a really nice feather in my cap. I really had fun creating my first book. I often tell people it's my most expensive resume ever because self-publishing is, you know, quite a time and money investment, but it was so rewarding. And when I created the book, I wanted to give canners a way in which to utilize and cook with their home canned goods because I wanted to encourage people to be able to to actually can. And you're not going to can food if you don't know how to use the food once it's in a jar, right? So on page 150, I shared with readers how to use the rhubarb apple chutney to make a delicious dessert. And there is a fun technique to creating and baking a tarte tatin. And I probably say that wrong too. It's a tarte tatin tart. It's a tart. but I want to dive into the recipe and instructions because I would love for you to be able to bake this amazing tart this weekend. For those of you who either have my book or you've made the rhubarb apple chutney and it's sitting on your pantry shelf, this is going to be a very fun and beautiful way to utilize it. So it's on page 150 and I'm going to go through those ingredients. Now, I share a dough recipe with all of you. It's my mom's recipe, my Mama Newton, and that is also in the book. If I'm not going to go through that today. So if you have your own pie dough recipe, you're welcome to use that. You can even use refrigerated store-bought pie crust for this. There's no wrong way. Just know that if you happen to have Canning Full Circle, you're going to see that I mentioned using, my mom's pie dough recipe, but just know you can use whichever. And then some of the things you're also going to want to make sure you have on hand to create the tarte tatin, you have to have a cast iron or oven safe skillet. And then you want to have a large serving plate or basically some type of plate, okay, that is larger than the circumference of the skillet. So it's going to take a minute to kind of go through your kitchen and figure out, okay, what can I use? Because the plate that we're going to flip it on, and this is the technique I was talking about, it has to be larger than the skillet. So that way everything makes it from the skillet onto the plate and that's how you serve it. So keep that in mind. All right. So for starters, you want to have, it's a very simple ingredient list. You want to have 3 tablespoons of butter, 2 large Bartlett pears, and you need to peel those, 2 rhubarb stalks, obviously the leaves removed, and you want to have 1/2 pint of rhubarb apple chutney on hand. If all you did was preserve in pints, that's okay. You're just going to use 1 cup of it. Okay. Now, preheat your oven to 350 degrees. And what I want you to do with those pears after they're peeled is I want you to slice each pear into 4 even lengthwise pieces. Okay. I want you to use a paring knife and remove the core and the seeds from its center. And then I want you to slice it. I want you to slice it very thin. If you have the book, you will see this gorgeous image. Actually, you know what I'll do? I will make that image the image that you see on the podcast. How about that? Instead of showing you some rhubarb, I will show you the tart from the book so you can see what I'm getting at and so you can see how gorgeous it is, okay? I want you to cut the rhubarb into 2.5-inch slices. And if you have very wide stalks, I want you to maybe cut those in half and then cut them again lengthwise to be the 2.5-inch pieces. Now, with a 10-inch oven-safe skillet, I personally use cast iron. I want you to start on the stovetop while the oven is preheating, and I want you to melt the butter on medium heat. Again, notice I say medium, not medium high. We're going to go slow because we don't want to over-caramelize. You'll see what I mean here in a minute. All right, so melt that butter on medium heat, and I want you to make sure that you're coating the entire base of the skillet with the melted butter. And then very graciously, I want you to arrange the pears and the rhubarb in an every other sequence because, this is just as beautiful as it is delicious. So it's kind of like you're creating a bit of artwork. And as you place this, I don't want you to make the pretty side face you. You put the pretty side of the food downward. Okay. Why? Because when we flip it, you want the beauty to be shown, right? And so think of it as, the reverse. You're placing everything down that you want to be, quote, pretty, onto the surface of the skillet. And when I say every other pattern, you know, place a slice of pear, then a slice of rhubarb, slice of pear, slice of rhubarb. Work your whole way around the base of that skillet. And it's okay that you'll have some openings. Everything doesn't have to cover the whole base because that's where the chutney comes in. But do your best to make it into a beautiful design. Okay. Now I want you to reduce the heat to low. And you're going to let this slowly cook for about 8 to 10 minutes. Then I want you to use a tablespoon and I want you to fill in all the gaps that is surrounding the rhubarb and the pears. I want you to fill it in with the rhubarb apple chutney. And be sure to use a full cup. So when I say a half a pint is a cup. If you have a pint of chutney, use a cup's worth, okay? And if you're still seeing some gaps, let's say, for instance, you're trying to make this, but your skillet is larger. So you've used an extra pear, maybe you've used an extra stalk or two of the rhubarb. Go ahead and use more of the chutney. Just don't make it so thick that it's going to be problematic and not cook through. Now, once everything is placed, I want you to allow it to cook for an additional 3 minutes on low before placing the pie dough on top of the fruit and chutney. What your goal is when you're placing the pie dough onto the top of everything is I want you to lightly tuck each edge into the side of the skillet. Using heat-proof mitts, I want you to now take that heat-proof skillet or oven-safe skillet. I want you to stick it in the oven and we are going to bake it for about 30 to 40 minutes or until the pie dough is a golden brown. You are going to have to watch this. Everyone's oven is a little bit different. And what might take 30 minutes in mine could possibly take 40 minutes in yours. You don't want to rush it, but you do not want to burn it either. Once it's done, I want you to remove the skillet from the oven. And I'd like you to just have it sit on the stovetop for a couple minutes. Now, this is where the tricky but fun, well, sometimes not so fun because I have had a few not make it on the plate. So it will take some practice because you're dealing with something extremely hot. And if you're like me and you're using cast iron, for some of us with weaker wrists, it could also be extremely heavy. So I want you to keep this in mind. If you have a spouse or a friend, adult child or teenager that's stronger than you that has the ability to do the flip, have them tune in because this is the fun part. All right. So I like using my heat-proof mitts. I put one on each hand, even though the plate isn't hot, it will become hot once the hot food gets in there. And I do not want to burn myself. So I highly suggest wearing a mitt on both hands. Now, what I want you to do in one hand is grab the handle of the skillet, and in the other, I want you to place the plate on top of the skillet, okay, and make sure it's centrally located. You don't want it, you know, off kilter. It's got to be directly on top of the skillet. Now, with the palm of your hand, I want you to firmly press the center of the plate. I want you to lift the skillet in your other hand by its handle. And in one fluid motion, I want you to lift it up and flip the skillet onto the plate. And then I want you to stand there and pause for about 10 seconds before removing the skillet. The goal is to allow it to fall completely onto the plate. And it might take some time, depending on how heavy it is. I sometimes give it a little shake. See, this is why you don't want it to get overcooked or overbaked, because if we start to caramelize too much and it starts to adhere to the skillet, it won't come off. And so you'll wind up with the pie dough on the plate and nothing else. Now, if that does happen, you can use a spatula and gently place everything onto the pie dough that's resting onto the plate and kind of recreate the design. But if you, like I said, if you watch it, and you don't overbake it or overcook it prior to putting it in the oven, it should slide right off and it'll be this gorgeous display with now the pie dough on the plate and the beautiful hues of, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful. It's the pears are lightly browned. They're gorgeous and well cooked. A little bit of that butter on there gave it the perfect caramelized flavor and appearance. The red color from, you know, not only the rhubarb, but also the cranberries, the dried cranberries. I mean, it is just delicious. It's delicious and it's beautiful. Now, with this, you want to go ahead and let it sit for a minute or two, but you want to serve it hot. You don't want it to get cold. And many a times we've taken small scoops of vanilla ice cream and placed them onto the individual servings. You're welcome to do that as well, or just eat it as is. But I guarantee you, once you get that knack down of flipping it onto the plate, you're going to find a lot of cool ways to make some awesome tart tatins in a skillet using a variety of different home canned goods combined with, you know, some fresh produce and whatnot. So have fun with this. Give it a go. If you've already got some chutney in your pantry, give it a go this very weekend and share with me the pictures from your gorgeous culinary endeavor. Share it with me on Facebook, post it on Instagram and tag the Canning Diva or just me at Canning Diva. You can also do a hashtag the Canning Diva, but I would love to see you put to use some of your amazing home canned creations in such a fashion. So do share that with me. I hope I've given you something fun to look forward to this spring. And yep, every day I'm praying that the snow goes away and I can see green grass and hear songbirds again. But thank you again for tuning in. I look forward to next week. And until we are together again, just know that I'm having fun putting together the promotion for my next book, Meals in a Jar. If you haven't seen that online yet, it's called The Canning Diva Presents Meals in a Jar. The book will be available August 6th. I have put together cuisines from around the world to give you meals in a jar that you can simply just pop open the top, heat and eat, and you know, take the daunting task of what to create for either dinner, lunch, or breakfast right out of the equation by utilizing these amazing recipes. So keep an eye out for that. You can find the pre-order available at canningdiva.com, or it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, christianbooks.com, BAM. It's everywhere. So amen for that. But take a look at getting your pre-order copy in the cart today, and you'll be canning in no time with Meals in a Jar this fall.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for another episode of Canning with the Diva. For tips, recipes, and techniques, please visit us online at canningdiva.com.